This is Andrea Chase, and I'm talking with David Schwimmer about Run, Fat Boy, Run, the tale of a Brit with no ambition who made one big mistake, running out on his pregnant girlfriend on their wedding day, and has spent the ensuing years being miserable about it. When his ex suddenly seems on the verge of settling down with a fabulously wealthy American, he decides to compete on the Yanks' own turf, as it were, marathoning, whipping himself into shape with only his crazy dream, a clueless friend who made an unfortunate bet, and a landlord with a spatula to help him triumph over impossible odds. The film star Simon Pegg as the putative fat boy, Tandy Newton as his true love, Hank Azaria as the rich American, and Dylan Moran as the friend with the betting problem. Schwimmer has achieved television immortality as Ross on Friends, has starred in numerous stage productions, including Neil LaBute's Some Girls, and has adapted for the stage Studs Terkel's book Race, How Blacks and Whites Think and Feel About the American Obsession. This is his debut as a feature film director, and I can't wait to talk about Run, Fat Boy, Run, which made me laugh and touched my heart. But I have to ask you about adapting Studs Terkel's book.
Oh yeah.
What compelled you to take that on? It's such a huge and huge topic and could make you crazy, I would think, trying to turn it into a production.
Yeah, I think it did almost make my co-adapter and I crazy. It was about a three-year process. We workshopped it for many, many months with a fine ensemble of actors of mixed race, as well as African-American and white and Filipino and Japanese, Chinese, and all Chicagoans pretty much, and of all ages, from 20 to 65, 70. And with Studs, he was part of the process. Yeah, I was lucky enough to meet Studs in about 1990, 2 years after I graduated from Northwestern. I had directed a play with Looking Glass, the theater company, and it was Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, which I had adapted. And Studs came up to me afterwards, and I knew who he was. I'd heard his voice, but I've never met him or knew what he looked like. So this, you know, this little guy in his traditional garb, his check shirt and trench coat, comes up to me and starts talking to me, and he says, I'd like to have you on my show. I do a little radio thing. I'm like, okay. I'd never done an interview before in my life, and Studs Terkel comes up to me, and then he says, I'm Studs. And I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. And then I went on his show, and we became friends after that. And as soon as his book came out, Race, I called him, and I said, I would love to adapt this. And then it took several years to get it on its feet. But it's the play that opened our new theater in Chicago. So,
what sort of insight do you get that just reading the book couldn't do?
It depends on the material. For that particular book, Race, Studs' whole thing is interviews. It's a book of interviews, and it's unlike The Jungle, which is a novel. So for that, what I was really interested in was, I guess, learning about myself, my own history with the issue of race and incidents of racism in my own life, and where we are today as a country, and in particular as a city of Chicago, how we are handling, how race relations, how far we've come and how little we've come, in a way. It was really an invitation to the community to have a dialogue about it, because it's something that's not really talked about anymore. It used to be talked about more in the 60s, maybe the 70s, but it's just not something that's a subject anymore. And that was what we did, and we worked really hard with different community groups in the city, and we had weekly, after every performance, we would have weekly discussions, invite talkbacks, and have specialists come in to talk about race from different parts of segments of society. And it was a big, wonderful event for the city to re-engage.
The Jungle, when that came out, made such a change on American society and how things were done. And then the very next thing you do is this thing by Studs Terkel, which has a similar effect, I would think, in Chicago, at least to get people talking and thinking.
Yeah.
But let's go on to Run, Fat Boy, Run, which is so funny and so touching and has what I would have considered an impossible premise, which is it starts out with this guy running out on his fiance on their wedding day. She's pregnant. She's beautiful. She's wonderful. She adores him. He's a pig. How do you keep an audience rooting for someone like that at that point?
You know, you're absolutely right, because when I first read the script, 3 pages in, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I will never forgive this man. It's just unforgivable. And yet, I found myself laughing out loud during the read of the script, and then by the end of it, I was really moved, and I was rooting for him, and I thought, when I finished the script, I thought, well, that is one hell of a challenge as a director. If you can pull that off with the right actor and, as you say, win the audience back and root for this guy. So I was really attracted to the challenge of the story, and I loved that in one movie you could have something as broad and silly as the locker room scene, or you know, the blister scene or whatever, and also have a scene where his son goes missing and be really dramatic and really emotional.
Yeah, you get a little verklempt. You can't help
you
it
do
somehow.
A little.
There are so many locations on this. That's the other thing. And you're shooting in London. Talk a little about the pleasures and perils of British weather and continuity.
It was brutal because we were on a really tight budget and we had over 50 locations in about 35 days in the most expensive city in the world to shoot in. And then you had the British weather, which is... we got really lucky. I have to say we got really lucky. But there were days where you would start and it was a gorgeous day. And within 3 hours, it was literally, it looked like night. And it was just pouring rain. You know, I have to credit my cinematographer. His genius was being able to really handle anything that the weather threw at us. And luckily, he was very familiar with making movies in London, so he was incredibly resourceful.
Simon Pegg stars as Dennis, who lives downstairs. And he goes through a lot, both as a character and as a human being in this. He has to run around in very tight shorts and swallow a lot of eggs. And is there anything he will not do? I mean, was there anything that he just said, I'm sorry, I can't do
it? No, he is the most game person I've ever known or worked with. He's just, when it comes to comedy, you know, he's fearless. He's just absolutely fearless. It's kind of amazing. He sets the standard so high for everyone on the crew and every other actor because he's on time, he's got no attitude, he's completely game, and he's like in tight shorts in freezing cold weather. He's just such a trooper, never complains. So the crew just sees that and they're like, well, I'm going to keep shtum, as it were, if I can't bitch about anything, because this guy's really a trooper.
And this is really more a question for Simon than for you, but I know in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, in both films, there's the motif of him leaping over back garden fences. And I was a little disappointed not to see that here.
Well, he leaps into the brush.
That's true.
He does do a huge somersault dive into the brush to escape Wit's detection. And, you know, there's the fall down the stairs.
Yes, of course. Yes, he's exploring new territory, perhaps. That's it. And I have to ask about this because it's going to be a classic of the genre. I can see this excerpted in compilations for generations to come. I'm speaking, of course, of the blister Lansing sequence.
Yes.
So you, as a director, you want to get the most out of this. You want your actors present. Talk about what you talk to them about, you know, what you're looking for from them, from your lighting guy, from the sound guy.
Oh my God. That scene, I've never laughed so hard in my life because you know, it's that thing where you're not allowed to laugh. And so you just can't control it. I was the worst. Because the crew, I would turn and I'd see the boom guy holding the boom, but his face, like his hand over his face with tears coming down his cheek. But I couldn't hold it. Like I blew a couple of takes because they were just so funny in that scene.
And you think the boom guy really has seen everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you get to the boom guy, that's I can only hope there will be a shot of that on the DVD release.
I think there is. I think the little extras, DVD extras.
I'm so excited.
The outtakes, the gag reel is really good.
You had directed for television before.
Yeah.
The idea of going from that to a feature film and the actuality of doing it. Contrast and compare, theory and practice.
Well, I've always wanted to do it. The idea was there for 20 years. I've always wanted to, you know, direct a movie. Practically speaking, you know, I was trying to get my sea legs, as it were, by getting behind the camera in any way I could. Directing a movie is over a year of your life, so I couldn't do it while I was doing the show. So I was trying to get as much experience as possible. And then finally finding a script and then getting it made is incredibly long process. It was 3 years before I got the movie made. I had read the script, immediately fell in love with it, literally put it down, got on the phone and said, I want to direct this movie. I got attached to it, which is in itself a 6-month process with legal, you know, with lawyers and everything. Then I'd be pitching actors and the company was not excited about the actors. Like, no, we can't make this movie on that budget with this actor. And it's a whole game of who's worth enough money and this and that. And then suddenly the script was bought by an English company, and I was suddenly a director of a British comedy. So the whole process was, I mean, the idea was there for a long time, but actually getting a movie made is very tough. And the other part of it is just after you get it made, just getting a release. I mean, I can't tell you how many movies, and I've been a part of a lot of them as an actor, that just don't get a real release.
I have one nitpicky question for
Okay.
you. In Dennis's apartment,
Yes.
In the basement, there is a poster of Team America.
That's right, there is. That was our homage, because we were about to go into a big montage sequence of him training. And if you saw Team America, they did a send-off of a montage better than anyone else can do it. So we were doing our, we were acknowledging in a little tip of the hat to those guys, who Simon knows, he knows those guys. So we were basically saying, we know we're about to go into a montage, and we know that what we're doing is ridiculous, but here's to you guys, you know.
It was so cool.
I'm glad you picked up on it. Yeah.
I want to talk just very briefly about Band of Brothers.
Okay.
You were playing someone distinctly unsympathetic, mm-hmm. and it was, I don't know quite how to put this, it was lovely to see you playing a character like that. It was
yeah.
so very different, and you were so good at it.
Thanks.
Is that a different kind of acting muscle for you?
Well, I mean, it's certainly different from doing situation comedy. Yeah, they're all different acting muscles, I think. I loved that role, and I loved the opportunity to play someone like that. And we were speaking a moment ago about little films that never go anywhere. I did this film, Dwayne Hopwood, which I played a struggling alcoholic father of two, and also different acting muscles. I love challenging myself, and I love using, you know, having the opportunity at least to do different things like that. It's strange because all throughout college and my 7 years of waiting tables and doing theater before Friends, I was doing all kinds of dramatic work. And then suddenly the show happens and I'm funny sitcom guy and this one character. And it's as though people don't understand I'm an actor, you know, I'm not that guy. And I get it, I mean, I understand it, but it took me a while to get my head around it, the reality of it. And I hope more roles like the one in Band of Brothers will emerge over the next 40 years, so we'll see.
And any chance Some Girls, the film version, you'll be in that?
I don't think so. There's another play of his that he and I have talked about making into a movie, which I think would translate better than Some Girls to a film, which is Fat Pig, which is dark and good and heartbreaking. So we've talked about that. I hear from him every couple of months. In fact, he just emailed me last week because he wants me to come see Some Girls that's playing in L.A. right now. So I'm going to try to do that.
David Schwimmer, thank you so much for
talking
with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.